Probably true.
Ready to go? All right, let's go ahead and get started. This is a meeting of the Oklahoma State Geographic Information Council. Welcome you all here today, and we do have a sign-in sheet over at the door. If you missed that coming in, please sign in so that we can keep you up to date on activities that come down the pike from time to time. This is a meeting being held under the Open Meeting Act. In compliance with that, notice was posted on the front of the building in accordance with that act, and so we are officially meeting today. If you would, join me with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Play ball. Okay. Before we get started, we'll do our traditional introductions. We'll go around the room just saying what agency we represent, who we are, so forth. So we'll start with Mike.
Mike Sexton, Oklahoma Department of Commerce.
Andrea Cruz, Oklahoma Department of Wildlife Conservation.
Craig Moody, Oklahoma Department of Transportation.
Mike Shagru, Water Resources Board.
Kim Carter, Oklahoma Office of Homeland Security.
Mike Sharp, Oklahoma Conservation Commission.
Troy Frazier, Oklahoma Tax Commission.
Wade Patterson, Garfield County Assessor.
Steve Stadler, State Geographer of Oklahoma.
Leroy Loggy, City Government.
David Wheelock, Oklahoma Department of Agriculture, Food and Forestry.
Amy Britton, Department of Environmental Quality.
Lloyd Walker, OMS.
Okay, Ray. Okay, well, thank you everyone for being here. First item, we have the November minutes to approve. Those have been circulated. Does anyone have any changes to the minutes? If not, I'd entertain a motion to approve.
So move.
Second.
Motion been made and seconded to approve minutes as published. Any discussion on that? Hearing none, those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Thank you. Minutes have been adopted. Committee reports. Dan, you got anything on land cover?
Yeah, I got a few things. We had a coordination conference call in September with all the groups involved and fairly well. One of the things that came out of that is we have scheduled an all day meeting January 31st in Stillwater to finalize the vegetation classification.
Once you have those mapping units defined, is that then
open? That's what they're going to use for those classification.
Okay, so then they'll start on that
right.
Phase of it. Okay. Okay, good. Okay, Charles, you want to, on the address standards?
We worked the address standards and pulled together most of the fields and several of the domains. I sent that out to a lot of the municipalities around and some of the agencies that work directly with 911 that reviewed it. We had a couple of small changes. review it and go from there. So we worked with Opalina a little bit and kind of looked with them to see if it's got some of the stuff that they need and they require in there for 911. I'm trying to grab some of the domains, probably from AT&T, some of the values, so it's a good list, so we're going to type that stuff in, have an accuracy, you know, full pull downs of the same stuff that's coming from AT&T on the 911 side of things. So.
The next step that we're going to look at, and as far as this address standard goes, is that the work group will make a presentation to the council on that to give you an idea of what it looks like, where they're at on it, and then we'll kick it out to the listserv to get some more public input on that, and then fine-tune that back with those that input that comes back, and then we will be bringing it back to the council for adoption after that. So we're getting close, I think, getting pretty close.
Some fields that have been going through this, I'm going to go back to my data sets and add a couple extra fields there I never really thought about. So you might be surprised what you feel about like good ideas.
They've been doing a good job of bouncing that off of people out there that are involved in addressing and getting a lot of good comments back. And so we're trying to get as many people involved in the whole aspect of addressing involved in this, get their input so that we do have a good standard that everyone can look to. Okay, thanks, Charles. Okay, we have for our guest today is Dwayne Mitchell. Dwayne's with the Weather Decision Technologies, and he's going to go over some of the work that they do for various entities here and around the world, I guess, so as far as services that you all provide. So, Dwayne, it is your show. We'll move out of the way.
Yeah, just sit Bill. Push up to the right.
All right.
Okay, Charles. Yeah, my name is Dwayne Mitchell, and I work for Weather Decision Technologies. I don't know how many of you may be familiar with our company, but we're located in Norman, Oklahoma. We are coming up on our 13th anniversary this May, and kind of where we come from, just a little background of who we are and where we come from. A number of us spent our first part of our careers working at the National Severe Storms Laboratory, which is housed within the National Weather Center in Norman. Just a quick show of hands, folks who have been able to or had the opportunity to tour the National Weather Center in Norman. Quite a few of you, about half maybe? Okay. So that's where I started my career, again, was at the National Severe Storms Laboratory doing applied research in severe storms. Then in 2000, my boss, who is Mike Iles, he is our president and our CEO, we left our nice cushy federal jobs and decided to go into private industry. And Mike Iles started Weather Decision Technologies, and a lot of things that we do, I mean, in a nutshell, we provide weather content and services to our clients. Those clients include folks in the energy industry, insurance industry. We provide a lot of custom weather content and services, including displays to foreign governments, including China, Thailand, the Philippines, Indonesia, and Italy and Greece, just to name a few. So just to kind of give a feel for what we do, and who we are. As you can see, I'm leaning upon what I did for GIS Day at OU back in November, but I think it really reflects what we're doing and what WDT is doing in GIS. Again, We're all here involved in GIS. All of us are GIS professionals. You know, what is GIS? I'm going to go ahead and kind of skip through this one. But here are some of the tools that are available, of course, and many of us are familiar with these. All of them, if not all of them. And WDT has leveraged or used all of these in one way or the other since 2000, since we started. We principally use ArcGIS desktop. We do run server, ArcGIS server version 10, working on getting upgraded to 10.1. We use it in the cloud at Amazon as well as on premises. We use Explorer every once in a while to do something that's very quick. It's very simple for a lot of our folks at WDT to do. They don't have to worry about the heaviness of using desktop. But we also use the free and open source things as well, Quantum GIS. We use Postgres a lot. I actually started using it more for data storage and data management. And then in the past, we've also dabbled a little bit with Manifold, MapInfo, GRASS. But interestingly enough, is that we're still using quite a bit old ArcView 3.2. And I'm just curious, who still uses ArcView 3.x, anything? Yeah, still a few. Yeah, there's some things in there that, when I first started, when I first got into this, it was ArcView 3.2. That's what I cut my teeth on. And so there are certainly things in there that we find that are just easier to do using that software. So I find it interesting to see how many people are actually still using that, because as I understand, 3.2 was released like in 1999, and here we are in 2013. So, okay, applications of GIS at WDT. One, principally, is really situation awareness through various client services, so that they can assess basically in real time, oftentimes, either in real time or perhaps post-mortem, severe and hazardous weather impacts. We do a lot of climatology assessments, looking at relatively long periods of records of lightning or hail or tornadoes. And then one of the things that we do at WDT is we look at a lot of historical data, and to help our clients, such whether it be a insurance claims adjuster, or whether it be maybe an attorney or an engineer, help them with regard to verification of something that happened yesterday or maybe 5 years ago. And so we are often involved in investigations with regards to hailstorms or lightning strikes, wind assessments, or oftentimes we'll get an inquiry regarding, well, was it a tornado or was it straight line winds? Because the way that insurance policies are written, it makes a difference on whether or not it's tornado, straight line winds. So we can gather these data and then visualize them on a map and do our analysis. Also, we have one of the other things that we do at WDT is we are, and I'll show some examples too, we are very actively involved in developing mobile applications. Specifically in the iOS environment, iPhone, iPad, as well as for Android. And also, we have a back-end alerting system whereby we can provide automated alerting to people with regard to lightning. These are lightning strikes, say, within 6 miles of my location. This is really useful for folks who are on the soccer field or those who have assets, obviously, that would be impacted by a lightning strike, such as a wind farm, for generating electricity. And then some of the other things to get involved in, creating custom base maps in support of other projects. Oftentimes, our international projects where we need to put together a custom stream basin map, or we need to put together a custom terrain map for their application. Well, what sort of weather content do we provide? Well, that's really sort of the core of WDT. really is weather content. It's data content. And it's not just taking weather data, say, from the National Weather Service and just a big shovel and just shoveling it on through, okay? Most weather content or most weather data, you know, is going to come from places or organizations such as the National Weather Service. But one of the things that we pride ourselves on is taking that data and actually creating derived products from, adding value to that data. Not just say, you know, well, here's this picture of this storm. Well, what is it doing? Why do people care about this storm? Well, they care about it because is it producing heavy rainfall? A lot of rainfall. Is there going to be flooding? Is there potential for tornadoes? What about large hail and damaging winds? So the weather content, one of the big things, of course, is radar. What we're used to seeing on the evening news, your local news. We also provide from that data, we can derive or estimate rainfall accumulation for the purpose of, you know, assessing the potential for flash floods. We have lightning stroke data, hurricane forecast track and intensity data, Weather Service watches and warnings, thunderstorm rotation tracking, so we can get an idea if there is a tornado, what's the approximate location, and which way is it going. And on down the list, we have hail, global precipitation observations. That's the other thing, is we provide global content, not just here in Oklahoma, not just in the U.S., but the entire globe. Okay, now I get into sort of the eye candy kinds of things. And here is an example of a report that we are a product that we routinely provide typically to insurance adjusters. And we have this branded as hail tracks, but what this is an assessment of hailstorms, and specifically the path of a hailstorm, as well as an estimate of the hail size of the hail that has fallen. And it's very simple. You know, to put this map together, we take the radar data as well as hail information from the radar, as well as human observations of hail. One of the things that the Weather Service routinely does is collect observations from storm spotters. And they record that information, they store it, and we can take that information and blend it with the radar data and come up with a fairly easy to understand rendering of where hailstorms have occurred and what locations they may have impacted. This is an example of a lightning strike report, and this is really popular among insurance carriers. Lots of damage happens every year, you know, billions of dollars as a result of lightning strikes. And so this is a tool to help the insurance carriers determine, you know, one, was there lightning on this day? And two, was there a lightning strike that was near the location of interest? So again, we just have a simple map. Here the red X's indicate the locations of cloud-to-ground lightning, and the analysis or the map is centered on the location of interest. Again, something that's very simple. And this is actually something that's done online. Our meteorologists actually don't even have to touch this at all. And data are stored in a database, and the user goes to our website, enters in an address and a date or time period of interest, and generates this report and delivers it to them by email. It's very fast. This is another product similar to our Hail Tracks report. We call this what we call Hail Express, and again, this is the map application is actually the Google Earth plugin, and we are rendering our swaths or analysis of hailstorms for a 24-hour period, so we can see the intensity of the hail, that is the hail size itself, indicated by the legend here. The hotter the color goes, the larger the hail that is estimated, And also in the black circles here, we can see the locations of the observed hail by storm spotters. Next, a couple of things that I've done just kind of on my own is, you know, looking at lightning assessments, not just looking for verifying the occurrence of lightning because of a lightning strike to property, but looking at long periods of data for lightning and determining, say, well, you know, how many, where might be the greatest threat for lightning over a period of time. And this is an assessment here over Ponca City, and this was just simply done by creating a fishnet, a grid, and using the onboard GIS tools to count up the number of strikes in each one of these grid cells, and can come up and determine, you know, what's the annual frequency of lightning strikes in each one of these grid cells. Similarly, did something very similar as well for the state of Oklahoma. I believe that's either a 5 or 10 kilometer grid, but the same thing. Determine, you know, what is the annual average or annual number of cloud to ground strokes for that period of time for 5 years. You know, and are there areas where there were more strikes than others? And we can see here in southwest Oklahoma, there was a hot spot there. And then in other areas as well, northeast of Oklahoma City. There's a more recent event, and got three different things here, but this is from Hurricane Sandy, and just showing the overall impact of Sandy along the in Maryland and in New Jersey. And here we have what we call our Extreme Precipitation Index, and basically what that is a product that we produce that compares how much rainfall is occurring now or has fallen in the last 24 hours, and how does that compare to the historical record of rainfall in this region? And essentially, it comes up with the rarity. So we've heard the term 100-year storm or 50-year storm or something like that. So it compares what's going on now, what's happened in the last 24 hours, to what's happened in the past. And we can see that in some areas we've had some pretty intense rainfall. Some areas here where they're saying a 50 to 75 year rainfall event here in Northern Virginia. We also have analyses here of sustained winds, and you know, Hurricane Sandy did a lot of damage, but a lot of it was more from the water as opposed to the winds. From the wind standpoint, Sandy wasn't, you know, really that strong a storm. It's still a hurricane. But the biggest impact was the rainfall. Similar to the lightning analysis that I showed you, we've done very similar things with hail. And shown here, we can see where in the red, where the most likely areas or where the hot spots are for hail activity. This is based on hail observations for a particular decade. I think this may have been in the 90s. And as you might expect, you see where you might say, well, shoot, that's Kansas City and that's Omaha. That's not what you would expect to see something like that, because of the fact that for the observations, you've got to have people to see it. And you're more likely to have that in high population areas. And then here we have a similar analysis, but this is based upon the data that I showed earlier on that Hail Tracks report and that Hail Express map showing those swaths of hail, where this is based upon just human observations of hail. Well, we've taken the radar data combined with radar or human observations and come up with a very similar looking map. Rainfall accumulation. This is from a rainfall event, I believe in 2007. This is from the remnants of Tropical Storm Aaron. Folks may remember this event, think it came overnight, dumped a whole lot of rain over Oklahoma. And we've used ArcGIS to do an assessment of our rainfall, our rainfall accumulation algorithm, and see how well it compares to our to observe rainfall at the ground. So another use, or another way in which we use GIS and WDT. Another study I did, this was part of a project that I did, just looking at the tornado surveyed, the surveyed damage of the tornadoes that occurred during the Alabama outbreak back in 2011. Looking at that data and comparing it to things like population density or the number of homes, you know, what was the impact of these of this event on society. Next here, this represents a real-time application that we have running. This probably looks familiar to many of you. This is the FlexViewer, Esri's FlexViewer, basically out of the box, but it's consuming the services that we are providing on our ArcGIS server. So we have our nationwide radar here, and we have, I think just this is Tropical Storm Sean, shown here in the Atlantic, and then just showing basically the exact same services only in desktop. But the main thing is that we're able to serve these data in real time on ArcGIS server. This is Hurricane Sandy again, the Flex, showing the Flex Viewer here, and all of these numbers and these black dots with these little flags, these are surface observations. As Hurricane Sandy was coming on shore, or as the eye was coming on shore, and in fact you can kind of see the rotation here associated with Sandy. We have southeast winds coming off off the Atlantic, and then we have northwest winds coming off the state, or over the state of Maryland and Virginia. And again, this is also a real-time service on ArcGIS server with the surface observations. Hurricane Sandy, again, to come on shore. This is reflectivity. And this was, I captured this in real time as Hurricane Sandy was coming on shore. I'm going to kind of switch gears a little bit, kind of getting away from ESRI software and systems and services, but also look at some of the other ways in which we use using GIS, or how we present weather information to people through a map application. This is what we call our IMAP Pro, and this is, we can see here a map of the county map. This is southwest Oklahoma. I believe that this was a potentially tornadic storm. We have the National Weather Service warning showing here, a legend showing the lightning strikes. Each one of these icons, the dots and the X's, represents the location of a lightning strike, and color-coded according to the age of the stroke. So white indicates the most recent stroke, say within the last minute, whereas the hotter the color gets, the orange, perhaps red and purple, indicates lightning strikes that are up to an hour old. So you can just kind of see the progression of lightning activity associated with each one of these storms. And this map application right here is actually based upon using the Google Maps API. About 2 months ago, we actually stopped using Google Maps. We are now using Mapbox. We found that Mapbox is a little bit faster, works very well. The base maps are nice, and Google changed their business model, and that has a lot to do with our switch too. It was going to cost us a whole lot more money. So Mapbox is where we went with this application. I mentioned earlier that WDT, we've invested a lot of time and effort into mobile applications. Instead of just having applications for enterprise-type clients, you know, corporate clients that they're using, you know, internally for their purposes, keeping their staff and their employees safe, we also have map applications that we can carry ourselves, consumer applications, to help keep us safe. and two of our flagship applications. One is RadarScope. Is anybody familiar with this by chance? Okay. All right. And it is a these are available on the iTunes or the Apple Store, but it is a radar-based app, hence its name. And you can pull that up on your phone, see where the storms are right there. You can animate the radar to see if the storm is coming towards you or if it's going to move away from you. And all kinds of different radar products, whether it be reflectivity, velocity, rainfall accumulation. You can see how much rainfall may have fallen in your area or, you know, at your house for the last hour, 3 hours, or since the storm started. And then we have what we call IMAP Weather Radio. We launched this about 2 years ago, version one. Version two, we launched last spring, I think in March. And it provides much of what you might would see in RadarScope and IMAP Weather Radio. You will get radar data, but you also get alerts. And to help you know whether or not there's weather, potentially hazardous weather, going to impact your location, or another location, up to five of them, that you're interested in. So you can enter in a location for your house, or for your parents' house, or the soccer field, or the baseball field, wherever, any locations that are important to you, and you can get alerts of whether or not there's a severe thunderstorm warning in effect for your location. And it's follow me, so if I'm in my car and I have my GPS enabled on my iPhone or my Android phone, if I'm driving down the road and there is a watcher warning issued for my location, I will get that warning. It's very, very handy. And we've gotten a lot of good feedback, and you know, people saying that this really helped me, you know, avert a potential disaster, or you know, running into very heavy rain and maybe avoiding an accident, or even a tornado. Again, just a few bullets on our mobile apps. Everything we do is polygon based. That is, that for tornado warnings, it's not just we don't warn on the whole county that's under the tornado warning, say. Instead, there's a polygon. Actually, I can pull this back here. You probably see this red outline here. That's what our warnings are based on. And again, I mentioned that we use Follow Me location-based services. So the alerting system is following you. As long as your GPS is activated on your phone, it will follow you and let you know if there is potentially hazardous weather at your location. All interactive mapping. We have live radar. You can see display the watches and warnings. Also, we have satellite data available on our mobile applications. Alerts based on Weather Service watches and warnings. We're working to get alerts for lightning into these applications or into these mobile apps as well. And also, the other thing is, as long as you know, if your phone is on and just sitting on your nightstand, it will automatically come on with a series of beeps and let you know that there is a watch or warning for your location. And you can customize and say, you know, I just want to know about, you know, tornado warnings, so that at 3 a.m. you don't get a fog advisory or something like that. But it's always constantly monitoring your location, again, trying to help you stay safe. That's it. That's my last slide. So, I have any questions? Did you?
Yes.
Aha. Okay. Well, I think you can go in. You can turn that one off. But yeah, anything that you have selected that you're interested in, you're going to get the warning, you know, at any time in 24 hours.
And that's the same application that Channel 9 has been advertising.
Correct. And that's the application that we built, but it's branded with their brand. No questions, comments?
Do you see the MESONet data? Is National Weather Service and the MESONet, are they tied together? Or do you
they
do
are
see
not.
Either?
The Oklahoma MESONet is funded by the state, basically a state agency. It's part of the Oklahoma Climate Survey in Norman. And so they are actually separate from the National Weather Service as far as their organization structure. Now, the Weather Service definitely uses those data, and the MESONet, the Oklahoma MESONet does share their data with the Weather Service. But we aren't able to use those data in our applications, at least not yet anyway. We haven't been able to find an arrangement to be able to do that. Yes, sir?
You're not able to use it? You're not allowed to use it?
I'm sorry? Yeah, and I'm not sure exactly what all the details of that are, but we do not incorporate those data into our applications.
Well, I can speak to that a little bit. I'm on the board, steering committee of the MESONet, and first of all, it's the actual project is a joint project between OU and OSU.
Correct.
And most of the personnel are actually at Norman, and we actually have OSU personnel at Norman as well. And it's mainly state-funded at this point with other grants and contracts that come in. And since the people of Oklahoma pay for it, and we're supposed to show value added to the state, things like that. So you can have all of that you want free.
Mm-hmm.
You can get on the network and see everything within 5 minutes of when it came into the system, except that the holdup is redistribution for profit.
Right.
And those all have to be done. They're all done on a per case basis, really. And for instance, Channel 9, all the channels in Oklahoma City pay because they're redistributing the data. And so it's not like it couldn't be done.
Correct.
And like that. Weather Service does take it and puts it in their, the AWIP system. They put it in just as one of their data layers in there, so they're looking at it all the time.
Correct.
And they were with us from the start, and there's other in terms of they provided us with some funding, so they can redistribute it because that is sort of mandated health and safety and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So with state agencies, we can come. It'll come, or to the universities, it'll come. Whatever you want to do, just along again. Commercial applications are a different beast, and National Weather Service and the weather community are trying to come to grips with how all this works with some privatization involved. So it's been a long haul on this.
So,
think we love Mike too. So
yeah,
that's another thing.
That's
Mike
good.
Was on, Mike was has been on the
correct
on the steering committee.
Yeah.
He knows the ins and outs. But sort of is what's your benefit for getting those data as opposed to what it costs?
Correct.
What the other data you have.
Exactly.
Basis.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks for that.
Well, as far as your pricing model, how do you structure that as far as the subscription service on particular products?
Mm-hmm.
How do you do that?
In a lot of different ways. Oftentimes it may be a revenue share if it is a white labeled application. A piece of what I showed is the IMAP weather radio. It all comes essentially from really the same code base. And then we take a piece of that where you don't get the alerting, but you get the radar display and all that. And we make that available to, you know, television stations throughout the U.S. who are interested in having their own app. And so that may be a revenue share. It may be a one-time fee. When we put one of our apps on here, anything that is branded IMAP, that is ours, and so we get a cut of the deal according to the terms of Apple off the iTunes store. So there's different ways of slicing all that up. So,
like, take an organization like the state of Oklahoma, for example, would you be able to create a kind of a subscription service for them to have someone that you get a license base in?
Yeah, and that would be similar to what we've done with some of the television stations. They may go and they'll purchase up front, say, 10,000 downloads or 10,000 instances of the app, and they can purchase all that up front, and then you're given a list of redemption codes, and then it's up to you, up to the client, the person that bought those 10,000 apps, to distribute those redemption codes however they want. Whether they want to, you know, just give it to their employees. Oftentimes they'll go have cards made and they hand them out at, you know, at exhibits or things like that. And, you know, for them, that's a benefit for them to, you know, to get more eyeballs on their website and their news and things like that. So that's one way of doing it. You can buy kind of a block up front. I don't know the details of it. I just know that it's been done. And it's part of a program that we have that we've had good success with television stations.
It just seems like there's a lot of places in the state government an application like this would be handy. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's ODOT or ag out in the field, or you know, you've got your emergency management people, public safety.
Right. Right.
Seems like it'd be a useful application.
Well, if there's, you know, interest here, or some, you know, folks go back and talk to, you know, their staff or their managers, I know the right people to get in touch with that could help make that happen.
So. Any other questions for Dwayne? Well, Dwayne, thank you very much.
All right, well, thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, does anybody have anything on general GIS issues, data issues, anything like that they want to bring up? Okay, how about any new business? You got any new business looking at us?
We survived the Mayan calendar.
We did, didn't we? I guess we're all still here, not in some virtual state. Okay, how about announcements? Got anything coming up on SCOG? Okay, thanks, Charles. Anybody else have anything on any meetings or anything? Okay, next meeting, February 1st, first Friday in February, I guess, is our regularly scheduled time. So that's just 3 weeks away. We'll look at that same time, same place. All right, entertain a motion to adjourn.
Make a motion.
Second. Those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Okay, we're adjourned. Thank you very much.
All right. Meeting in Enid.
Yeah.
do lunch.
You going to meet in Stillwater after that?
Thank you.
By me, no.
Take care.
Always a pleasure.
Good seeing you.
You too.
I'm going to try.
All right, I'll be calling you on this because I'm sure I'll just want some hand holding before I pull the trigger.
I think most of next week I'll be in the office. Okay.